Hey there, I'm Megan, and you're listening to Most Wanted.
Hi, Sissy.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Most Wanted. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Amanda.
How are you doing this week, Sis?
Good. It's been just weather. I'm always talking about weather. We're Midwesterners. We've got to talk about weather.
Absolutely.
But like, this week was like cold and warm and cold and warm, and it was weird.
And this coming week's supposed to be warm.
Yeah, but then it gets cold again.
Oh, it does?
I think there's another cold front coming through at the end of the week. I don't know.
So by the time this is getting released, it's going to be cold?
Yes, supposedly.
Great.
Allegedly.
Can't wait. Allegedly, supposedly, of course.
Yeah.
Well, sis, is there anything you want to talk about? My script is kind of long.
I feel like there was something I was going to tell you. Oh, I watched Jury Duty. That's the only thing I want to share with you.
Did you like it?
I loved it. And my favorite part was the last episode, of course.
Oh my gosh. It's so good. If any of our listeners have not seen Jury Duty, I highly recommend it. It's on some free random streaming service.
You can watch it on Amazon Prime because Freebie is free. So you can like watch it with ads on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
So it was really it was a quick watch. It was an enjoyable watch. Loved every
minute. It's so funny. So, oh my gosh, it's so good. And I wish that they had done this like three or four times before they released it so we could have a couple seasons of it. But that's okay. Oh, it's so good.
I loved it so much. And how fun for the actors to have to kind of improv.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Anyway, yeah, I don't want to spoil too much. It's so good. You need
to watch it. It's so good. Yeah, everyone has to watch it.
So that was my only thing.
Okay. Well, that was a great thing. And I'm really happy that we started off with some giggles because there are no giggles to be had moving forward.
I figured that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. So Amanda, again, this week, we're going to, instead of playing What's My Crime, I'm just going to tell you who we are covering.
Okay.
Because as you know, by the name of the episode, this story is about the victim.
Yes.
Yep. This week, I will be covering the murder of Trayvon Martin and the acquittal of George Zimmerman.
Ooh.
Right. What do you remember about this case?
I mean, I basically remember what your title is. I remember very few details about it other than Trayvon was a minor. He had like Skittles in his hand. And George Zimmerman was not a cop, but was kind of trying to act like one.
I believe he's called a wannabe cop many times.
Yeah. So yeah. I truly don't know very many of the details of this.
Okay. I was a freshman in college, and I know that that's not a good excuse, but like, I don't remember any of this, and I'm going to blame it a little bit on not like having much access to the news.
Yeah.
Not having a TV, never reading the paper, that kind of thing.
I also think that this was a time in my life where I had gone to a very conservative college, very not diverse college.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I was still a couple years out from doing the necessary learning to really understand what had happened in this case. And I think it was more around Michael Brown, like that era, when I started doing the reading. So Trayvon Martin, I didn't miss it. I remember it happening. But I was not very aware of what it meant.
No, I wasn't either.
Being angry.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also, really quick before I get started, when we decided to do this episode, we really didn't have any idea what order they were going to be released in. But it just so happens that on the day this comes out, this tragedy happened 3 days ago. That was the anniversary.
Oh, man.
So, I know. So, rest in peace, Trayvon Martin.
Rest in power.
Yeah. Before I really get started, I think we should go into an ad break. Hey, it's Lauren.
And Amanda.
And we host Most Wanted, a true crime podcast, and we have some exciting news for you.
Mark your calendars for July 12th to 14th, 2024. We're heading to the True Crime and Paranormal Podcast Festival in Denver, Colorado, and you won't want to miss it.
Amanda and I attended the 2023 festival, and we are so excited about the changes coming in 2024. They've rolled out a podcast education track tailored to seasoned creators and those dreaming of launching their own podcast. This weekend isn't just about podcasts. It's about advocacy, ethics, and building a community.
Worried about costs? Don't worry about it. This festival is designed with you in mind, an affordable experience without sacrificing quality. There are no inflated costs, just a weekend packed with authenticity, education, and networking. Have you ever wished for genuine one-on-one interactions with your favorite creators? Well, now's your chance.
Don't miss out. Snag your tickets at truecrimepodcastfestival.com for an unforgettable experience. Join us and use code WANTED to let them know we sent you. See you there. All right, Sissy, let's get going.
All right.
In 2012, when Trayvon Martin was killed, the cry "Justice for Trayvon Martin" awakened people to the urgency of building anti-racist movements. But we focus somewhat too sharply on George Zimmerman to be able to identify the structures of racist violence and specifically the links between vigilante violence and state violence. And that is a quote from Angela Davis from her book, Freedom is a Constant Struggle. And since we just covered her at the beginning of the month, I kind of wanted to include that to start the episode.
I love that.
George Michael Zimmerman was born on October 5th, 1983 in Manassas, Virginia, to Gladys and Robert Zimmerman. Oh, also, I've been stumbling over Zimmerman every time I read this, so good for me. Which it's is fine.
There's a lot of M's, Zimmerman.
Which is fine, because I hate this asshole, so if it comes up Zimmerman, I don't really care.
Okay. Sounds good.
He was raised Catholic and attended All Saints Catholic School in Manassas before going to a public school. After graduating high school, Zimmerman moved to Lake Mary, Florida, which is a suburb of Orlando, where he was employed as an insurance agency. In July 2005, Zimmerman was arrested after allegedly assaulting an undercover police officer who was attempting to arrest his friend at a bar.
Wait. What?
Yep.
So he got arrested because he was trying to, like, hurt the cop?
Yep. I'm assuming it was, like, a bar fight of some sort, and it just happened to be an undercover cop.
This seems like a great guy already.
Yeah. But these charges were dropped after Zimmerman agreed to enter an alcohol education program. So running with the cops right away.
Yeah. Great.
In 2007, Zimmerman married a woman named Shelley Dean, and 2 years later, they began renting a townhouse in Sanford, Florida, in the Retreat at Twin Lakes Community.
Okay. Quick question for you. Is she related to Paula Dean?
I think they're second cousins.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I shouldn't say no. I guess I don't know. Paula Dean?
She is... celebrity chef who puts butter and lard and Crisco and everything. Known for her delicious but unhealthy food is my understanding. I also think she's racist, but
maybe they are second cousins then.
Sorry.
In early 2011, George Zimmerman stood before a city council community forum with a grievance. Sanford cops are lazy, he told the then mayor. The community college criminal justice major said he knew because he went on ride-alongs with the Sanford police. And what I saw was disgusting, he said.
I'm still laughing at community college criminal justice. So you got as associates or just...
I don't know. Classes? It was... Listen, everything I got was from Wikipedia on him because I didn't want whatever.
Absolutely.
And it was a little shady that they worded it that way, so I included it.
I like it.
Yeah.
Community college criminal justice major.
Mm-hmm.
Check.
What he saw was disgusting. The police officer showed him his favorite hiding spots for taking naps and explained to me he doesn't carry a long gun in his vehicle because, in his words, anything that requires a long gun requires a lot of paperwork and you're going to find me as far away from it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So I've heard the argument that, if you need a long gun, you should probably have more people with you. But, whoa.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. Zimmerman said about this officer, he took two lunch breaks and attended a going away party for one of his fellow officers, which if you have someone doing a ride along, why?
Yeah, you don't need to bring the ride along person with you to
no.
your going away party.
No.
The two lunch breaks, I'm a little, I get that. But
well,
I'm not saying you should be doing it, I just get it.
I feel like police officers like maybe work 12s, wouldn't that be like lunch and dinner?
Probably, yeah.
But I guess there was no specific details about it, but he said that he took two lunch breaks.
Well, and also, this is George Zimmerman talking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is he credible? Do we believe him? Like, he could be exaggerating too.
Later, and I didn't write this down, later the Sanford Police Department says that they have no proof that he actually did any of this.
So, credibility, folks. But I mean, if he's up telling people this, and they don't have a reason to not believe him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's going up to City Hall and saying all this stuff. I mean, I've never been to a City Hall meeting, but
Dad,
I'm assuming
them on TV.
Okay. Good for you, Dad. So Zimmerman's public criticism of the police department and its former chief is ironic, I guess. But when you consider what happens just 1 year later, the new police chief took on a national criticism over how the department handled Zimmerman's shooting of a high school junior, Trayvon Martin. Mm. The department was accused of sloppy police work and favoritism in Zimmerman's favor. So it is kind of interesting that he went in and called them lazy and then they turn around and give him like a big pat on the back.
Yeah, like that. Because is he a white guy?
He identifies as Hispanic, and I'm not going to speak to that because...
Is he white passing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, that's how our country works.
Yep. Trayvon Benjamin Martin was born in Miami, Florida on February 5th, 1995, to his parents Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin. Trayvon was a bright kid who was well-rounded and had a wonderful upbringing. Trayvon had an interest in airplanes, and in the summer of 2009, he enrolled in Experience Aviation, which is a 7-week program in Opa-locka, Florida.
Wow.
Opa-locka? It might be Opa-locka. Sorry. Well, it's Opa-locka.
Oh.
Opa-locka.
Opa-locka sounds fine.
Okay.
I don't know how you would say that. And Floridians sometimes pronounce things in ways that are surprising.
Yeah, that's true. So this program was run by an award-winning aviator, Barrington Irving. According to Irving, Trayvon was a polite youth and, quote, reminded me of myself because I had a strong interest in football until I fell in love with aviation.
That is so cool, by the way.
I know!
And that he got that kind of praise. That is so cool.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I love that.
Every time I read it, I was just like, I can't even imagine.
I know.
After Martin graduated from the program, he spent the next summer as a volunteer helping out the new students in the aviation program.
Oh,
so he spent his, like, I so in 2009, he was born in 95, I'm terrible at math, it's 14?
14.
Yeah, you spent 15-year-old when you probably want to be hanging out with friends or doing whatever, but he spent it volunteering. I just think that that's so cool.
I love that.
Yeah, I do too.
He sounds like such a good kid.
I know. In 2012, Trayvon attended a North Miami-Dade high school and was a junior. And according to his parents, Trayvon had hoped to attend the University of Miami or Florida A&M University. Mm-hmm. And isn't one of the Florida A&M...
Florida A&M is a historically black university.
Yeah.
And then University of Miami, that's the Hurricanes, I think. Like, they're a... Are these... SEC? They're like a big school.
Oh, okay.
Maybe ACC, but like they're in one of the big five or the Power Five conferences.
So Trayvon was a typical teenager, and sometimes being a teenager comes with behavioral issues.
Sure.
At the time of the shooting, he was serving a 10-day suspension for having a marijuana pipe and an empty bag containing marijuana residue in his backpack.
Which is like a teenage thing to do.
I mean,
2012, like, yeah.
I mean, 12 years ago, weed was so not accepted like it is now. So
it was 2012 was the first election that marijuana was legalized in a state. I believe it was Colorado and Washington.
Oh.
So, but like, so it was starting to change. But like, I remember when that election happened, people here, because I was living in Minnesota then too, people were just like, oh my gosh, they're legalizing marijuana? Like, how could they? It's a dangerous drug. No, it's not.
He had been suspended twice before. Once was for tardiness and truancy, and the second was for graffitiing a door. Sorry, that word was hard for me.
Graffitiing is a lot of E noises.
Yeah. So during his third suspension, Trayvon went and stayed with his father, who maybe lived, or they were maybe just staying with his girlfriend, but they were 4 hours away in Sanford, Florida, because they were in Miami. Now they're in Sanford.
Yep.
I've seen in a few places that Tracy Martin himself was a resident, but I've also seen that Trayvon and Tracy were just visiting Tracy's fiance at the townhouse during the suspension. I'm not really sure which is true, but I just want to say that I've seen both.
Okay.
Trayvon and Tracy's fiance were all staying at the townhouse located at the Retreat at Twin Lakes in Sanford, Florida, in February 2012. They were there because neither Tracy nor Trayvon's mother wanted Trayvon to stay in his hometown when he was on suspension, because they didn't want him to like enjoy time with friends.
Yeah,
so,
that makes sense.
Yep.
Especially because one of his suspensions was like for truancy and tardiness.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You don't get to have fun. You got to. Yeah. I totally get it. The residents of the townhouse complex, again, Retreat at Twin Lakes. In response to a rash of robberies and burglaries, the community established a neighborhood watch in September 2011. George Zimmerman was selected as the program coordinator.
Did he select himself? Because that wouldn't surprise me.
Honestly, I kind of thought the same thing, but it doesn't say anywhere. It just says that he was selected.
Selected by a board of one.
But also, if somebody wants it done and someone's like, I'll do it. It's like, absolutely. Sure, give it to the eager guy, you know?
Yeah, give it to the wannabe cop.
Yeah, yeah. He regularly patrolled the streets, and he was licensed to carry a firearm, which it is Florida, but yeah.
But I mean, I guess his charges were dropped. I was going to say, for an assault charge, you probably shouldn't be able to easily get a license, but the charges were dropped.
Yeah. So from August 2011 to February 2012, Zimmerman had called the police several times to state that he had seen individuals whom he had deemed suspicious. All of these reported figures were black males.
Color me shocked.
I was going to say.
So surprised by this news.
I know.
I don't know what to do with my... What an asshole.
I know. It's just like, it starts bad and it just gets worse.
Yeah. Yikes.
On February 26, 2012, dressed in a hooded sweatshirt, Trayvon was on his way back to the townhouse after buying a bag of Skittles and an iced tea at a 7-Eleven nearby. That's when 28-year-old George Zimmerman spotted Trayvon Martin.
He was only 28?
I know!
He looks much older in all of the footage.
He's currently 40, and I thought he was 40 back in 2012.
Yeah, me too. I would have guessed he was like in his 60s.
Zimmerman saw Trayvon from his SUV and called the police department at 7:11 p.m. to report a suspicious guy. On the call, Zimmerman says, "We've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something."
You know, Skittles are a hell of a drug.
I said it starts bad.
Yeah.
Zimmerman reported that the person had his hand in his waistband and was walking in between homes.
How dare he?
Trayvon had indeed been walking in between homes, and he was also talking on his cell phone. And I'm assuming it doesn't say this anywhere. He was walking in between homes because it was the quickest way home.
Probably. And also, hand in his waistband, he had a hooded sweatshirt on.
Correct. And if you have an iced tea, probably like an Arizona iced tea and Skittles, those could also be in your pocket.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, this man is jumping to a lot of conclusions based on...
Nothing. And I haven't gotten to this yet. It's like 7 o'clock at night when this is happening in February.
Yeah, so
but I mean, the sun's probably down. You probably really can't see shit.
That's a good point too.
Yeah.
He's probably just seeing him like under street lamps, which would also be misleading.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So during his walk home, he complained to his friend that a man was watching him.
I would too.
But I didn't even realize that Trayvon had eyes on him either.
I guess I didn't know that either. But
yeah. But yeah, I mean, I would be like, WTF, fucking yeah. go
Why
away.
Is this guy watching me?
Yeah. So his friend urged him to run. So Trayvon began to run.
Oh, and that's going to look, it's going to look more it's suspicious. It's
going, right. He's running, Zimmerman is heard saying on the 911 call. The dispatcher asks which way he was running and asks Zimmerman if he was following the person, which he replies, yes. Mm. Okay, we don't need you to do that, Mm-mm. the dispatcher responded. But you can clearly hear on the 911 call the sounds of the car door chime, like when it's open and the key's in the ignition. Mm-hmm. It's also heard during this call, Zimmerman say, these assholes, they always get away.
Sir.
Yeah.
Who is the asshole in this situation?
Is it the pot calling the kettle black?
Right. Or maybe it's just the pot being completely not self-aware.
Well, yeah, that's true. Zimmerman asked the police to call him upon their arrival so that he could provide his location. Because, oh, again, God. He's following him. George Zimmerman ended the call at 7:15 p.m. that evening.
He was on that call for 4 minutes?
Yep. Mm. What happened next is a matter of dispute. Trayvon and Zimmerman were obviously in the middle of it, but no one else saw what had happened. One witness later told police that she heard a commotion, which sounded like arguing, while another mentioned loud talking. And on one 911 call placed by a neighbor, a police sergeant counted one man yelling, help or help me, 14 times in the span of 38 seconds.
Oh my God.
Numerous witnesses, however, did clearly hear a gunshot. The shot came from Zimmerman's black 9mm semi-automatic handgun. The bullet went into Trayvon's left chest and lodged there. Police headed to the neighborhood after Zimmerman's initial 911 call, but they didn't arrive until after the fatal shot. They found Trayvon face down in the grass.
Oh my God.
A sergeant checked and couldn't find a pulse. For the next 6 minutes, he and another police officer teamed up to conduct CPR on Trayvon.
Well, and that's, if he got shot in the chest.
Mm-hmm. The left.
Right. I just mean like trying to do CPR while you're also trying not to like make him bleed harder. That would just be a very helpless feeling situation.
I did see somewhere that a plastic bag brought by a neighbor was used to seal his chest wound.
Okay. Because now cops and, you know, law enforcement carry first aid kits that have, they're called something. Like, I think they're actually called chest seals.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
To stop bleeding.
Like, yeah, it's like sticky and it just like seals it up. Just so that you can do like CPR and stop bleeding and stuff. But this was 12 years ago.
Yeah. Firefighters and EMS from the Sanford Police Department arrived at 7:27 p.m. to continue efforts to try to save him.
That's a long time later.
3 minutes later, at 7:30 p.m., Trayvon Martin was pronounced dead. Mm. So all this happens in 15 minutes.
Wow.
I know. Trayvon Martin was just 70 yards from the rear door of the townhouse where he was staying.
I'm not making noise. I'm shaking my head.
This no, is I just... know. And I'm trying not to cry. I'm sorry. Mm. The officer then took Zimmerman into custody that night. Good. While in custody, Zimmerman claimed he shot Trayvon Martin in self-defense. Yeah. According to Zimmerman's police interview later that night, he states, I was walking back through to where my car was, and he jumped out from the bushes and said, what the fuck's your problem, homie? And I said, I don't have a problem. And he goes, now you have a problem, and he punched me in the nose. According to Zimmerman, the punch knocked him to the grass, where Trayvon continued to pummel him.
I don't believe any of this
for
a second.
No, I don't either.
Especially knowing that he was following him. Why would Trayvon hop out from a bush?
He was trying to get the fuck away from him.
There was no way. He was probably trying to go home. There's no way.
There's no way.
especially because like 17-year-old, he's probably gonna be like, oh man, this older white dude's following me.
Right.
Like, yeah, he wouldn't. That doesn't sound reasonable at all.
Zimmerman said, I started screaming for help. I couldn't see. I couldn't breathe.
You can't co-opt the I can't breathe stuff, man. Come on.
I know. It's, yeah, I know.
Actually, that stuff might not have become mainstream yet.
It wasn't.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, but again, that was all Zimmerman's statement. And later at trial, Trayvon's friend, who he was on the phone with, tells a little bit of a different version of that.
You don't say.
The police could not hold Zimmerman because there was no evidence that contradicted his version of the event, because state law permitted the use of deadly force in self-defense.
Fucking Florida.
Zimmerman was released shortly after with no charges filed. Mm-hmm. Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin were outraged.
Of course. I'm outraged.
I am too. Had their son been profiled as suspicious merely because he was black?
Yes.
As media attention picked up in early March, others joined in, first locally and then far beyond. Mm-hmm. The case became a social media phenomenon and a national story. Mm-hmm. President Barack Obama stated to the media that if he had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. Mm-hmm. And he also called for the case to be investigated. Mm-hmm. And after getting legal representation, Trayvon's parents also created a change.org document that received more than 1 million signatures calling for Zimmerman to be placed under arrest.
Whoa. That's
I know.
A lot.
That's impressive. I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
On March 12th, the chief of the Sanford Police Department declared that no criminal charges could be filed against Zimmerman because of the absence of probable cause. A day later, however...
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
A day later, however, a Sanford police investigator assigned to the case recommended that Zimmerman be charged with manslaughter, mm-hmm, on the basis that the violent encounter could have been avoided.
Absolutely. Yeah. Manslaughter at the minimum.
Yeah. Don't fucking follow someone. You are patrolling your town association, your HOA, whatever the hell it's called.
You're not a cop, man.
Yeah. You called 911. That's where your duty stops.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this since you were talking about the other calls he'd made to 911.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of law enforcement has unofficial notification about certain people calling. They call them frequent flyers.
Oh, really?
So I wonder if they're kind of like, don't follow him, man, because like they knew that he'd made calls like this before.
Probably.
Maybe not, but like I do wonder, because some people that report a lot that aren't taken very seriously because it's usually bullshit,
mm-hmm,
like racist shit and whatnot. Like, it could be.
Yeah, very well could be. Protest rallies were held in cities nationwide, and on March 21st in New York City, hundreds of people gathered in the Million Hoodie March in Union Square and demanded justice for Trayvon. Mm-hmm. They wanted to know why a teenager armed with nothing deadlier than Skittles, iced tea, and a cell phone is dead.
Yeah. When this older white man had a gun, mm-hmm, that he didn't need to have for neighborhood watch.
That's what I didn't understand.
Yeah, and is not being charged with anything. Bullshit.
Bullshit. Social media brought together multitudes for protests like the Million Hoodie March, as well as countless celebrities and everyday people who posted images of themselves wearing hoodies with the hashtag I am Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, I do too.
The one that sticks out to me is, was LeBron already playing for the Miami Heat?
Yeah, I'm just about to get into that.
Oh, okay, sorry. I was going to say, one that sticks out to me is it was Dwayne Wade and LeBron and a couple, mm-hmm, others that played for the Heat that wore hoodies from,
yeah,
their warm-ups. Yeah.
Yeah. During this time, there was a Miami Heat basketball game against the Detroit Pistons where some of the team players had messages on their sneakers such as, rest in peace, Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. Also, LeBron James, who was playing for the Miami Heat at the time, posted an image of him and his teammates wearing hoodies with their heads bowed. Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to get into the lead up and the trial.
Okay.
In April 2012, the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, appointed a special prosecutor for the case who brought a criminal charge of second-degree murder against Zimmerman.
Okay.
Now, I don't know anything about Rick Scott, but good for you. I mean, you have to at this point, but you should have done it anyways. But
Yeah.
He did it. Later that day, Zimmerman turned himself in to face charges and a trial that almost no one in law enforcement believed should happen.
Mm.
Following a bond hearing on April 20th, 2012, Zimmerman's bond was set for $150,000, and 3 days later, he was released on bail and fitted with an electric monitoring device.
So I think you and I have talked about bond versus bail before. Does that mean that it was like $15,000 he gets out, or it was like $1.5 million for bail and they were able to get him out?
$15,000 and he gets out.
Ugh, okay.
Because I go into a tangent about it later.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay.
I keep predicting your tangents and I don't mean to.
No, that's okay. Zimmerman's attorney entered a not guilty plea on his behalf.
You don't say.
And now here I go into my tangent.
Okay, perfect.
So the preparation for this trial sounds like an absolute shit show.
Yeah, I bet it was.
So while I was researching this case, I saw a headline that said on August 29th, 2012, the 5th District Court of Appeal granted the petition for a new judge for the trial.
Mm-hmm.
So Circuit Judge Deborah Nelson was assigned to the case. Judge Deborah Nelson of the 18th Circuit Court of Florida was the 4th judge to preside over this case.
Jesus Christ. So just you reading that to me, the 5th Circuit Court of Appeals is probably federal, which means that they, because the federal 5th Did Circuit...
Fifth District Court of Appeal? Is that the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So District Court is, there's 58 districts, something like that in the U.S. No, it's like 100 something. Anyway, there's a bunch of, this is federal court. So there's a bunch of district courts. And then above that, there's 13 circuits and they do the appeals. So my guess is if they were trying to get a new judge in Florida, they appealed it like in federal court to try to like remove her. Unless Florida also has the same type of court of appeals system that the federal. I know that's the part I don't know. But the Fifth Circuit, the reason I'm bringing this up, the Fifth Circuit federally is known to be the most conservative circuit in the entire country. It's the Fifth Circuit where Mifepristone was deemed to not be like passing FDA stuff. So that the abortion pills don't work. It's the Fifth Circuit that keeps approving death penalty shit. It's the Fifth Circuit that is covering like all like the Gulf states, like Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, like that's all Fifth Circuit. So they're just very historically conservative. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's what they're talking about here, where they're keeping removing judges. Mm-hmm. But also the state of Florida could have their appeals could be like district court of appeals and have the same like numbering system.
Okay.
And it just happens to be the fifth. So this is a long tangent for being like, it wouldn't surprise me if it was the federal Fifth Circuit.
Okay.
Also, it might not be.
I'm not going to lie. Court stuff bores me. So I didn't really look, but this was actually kind of fun to read.
I still haven't gotten to go on my off air tangent about the Supreme Court that you promised me.
Good. Oh, we'll have lunch soon, I promise. So after this, I did a little more research, and that's when I saw that on June 1st, 2012, Judge Lester, who was the bond judge, revoked Zimmerman's bond and ordered him to surrender within 48 hours after the prosecution argued that Zimmerman and his wife, Shelley Zimmerman, misrepresented their finances when Zimmerman's bond was originally set in April.
Hell yeah. Lock him up.
So on June 12th, 2012, Zimmerman's wife was arrested and charged with perjury.
Hell yeah. get her.
On June 20th, 2012, the Sanford Police Chief Lee was officially fired.
Nice.
On June 25th, 2012, Zimmerman's attorney filed a motion requesting a reasonable bond be set for Zimmerman's release from jail.
So misrepresenting, did they misrepresent high or low? I'd assume low so he'd be able to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Which Judge Lester, not very happy that that happened. So on July 5th, 2012, the judge set Zimmerman's bond for $1 million.
Hell yeah.
I was like, I just kept reading and I was like, what is happening?
People do not like when you misrepresent your finances.
Well, I mean, general, the wife got arrested, so I'm assuming it's like a real big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they wanted a low bail. So they misrepresented their finances. So they 100%. Afford it. Yeah.
100%. So the following day on June 6, 2012, Zimmerman was released from jail after he posted the required 10% of the $1 million.
Oh, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. On August 13th, Zimmerman appealed Judge Lester's refusal to recuse himself. On August 29th, 2012, a Florida appeals court grants Zimmerman's request for a new judge, saying that Judge Lester's remarks in a bail order put Zimmerman in reasonable fear for a fair trial, which I hate, but I get.
I get that too, actually. That sucks, though.
Yeah. So then on August 30th, 2012, Judge Deborah Nelson was assigned to replace Judge Lester in the Zimmerman case.
So is this number six or was she number four?
She was number four.
Okay.
So Lester was three. I have no idea who one and two were.
Okay.
But yeah, it was just like this timeline laid out and I was like, so I'm sorry about that rabbit hole, but I thought it was interesting and I needed just a little bit of something.
Yeah. To I'm break sorry away. About the rabbit hole that I told you about the Fifth Circuit.
That's okay. I'll probably have to leave it in. Because it does make sense and you said stuff. My eyes were glazed over, but it did help. Thank you. So in August 2012, Zimmerman's attorney, Mark O'Mara, announced that his client would ask for an immunity hearing under the Stand Your Ground law.
Quick question. Is it Mark space O'Mara or Marco space Mara?
Mark O'Mara.
Okay. I'm going to call him Marco.
Polo. But no such hearing would ever take place. Amanda, do you know what the Stand Your Ground law is?
I don't know the details of it. I do know the basis of it. It's like if people are on either your property or threatening you, you are allowed to use deadly force against them if you feel like your life or property are in danger, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, basically. I do have Florida's current Stand Your Ground law, and it protects you from prosecution for homicide if you can prove that you believed you or another person was in imminent danger of bodily harm or death, or that you used deadly force to prevent the commission of a felony. So, yeah.
Which none of that applies here.
No,
but
no.
I know they're going to use it, but none of that applies here.
Right. Well, Zimmerman waived his right to an immunity hearing, and O'Mara later explained that he concluded that the Stand Your Ground law didn't apply because his client had no option to retreat.
No, it didn't apply because he didn't need to use deadly force. Like, I get what you're saying, and I get what the defense attorney is saying, but the reason it didn't apply is because he attacked.
Yes. Correct.
There's no self-defense here. Okay. Keep going.
Yeah, I'm aware. He also noted that the hearing would force him to reveal his case to the prosecution in advance of the trial if the judge were to deny Zimmerman's immunity petition. Which, again, I get, but I hate.
Could you hear my eyes roll?
Yes, I think the whole world could. Did you feel that shake, everyone? That was her rolling her eyes. So Judge Deborah Nelson issued several rulings on pre-trial motions on May 28th, 2013. She denied a request by the defense to take the jury to the crime scene, which I don't know if I would want to go to the crime scene.
What would that do? It was a street.
I don't know.
I
don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
Also noting the tense circumstances around the trial, Judge Nelson ruled that the jury would remain anonymous and be referred to only by numbers.
That's smart.
That's really smart. Yeah. Yeah. On June 20th, 10 days after completing jury questionnaires, a six-person, all-female jury was selected for the trial.
Oh, this is one of those where they don't have 12.
I think it's a Florida thing. Five of the selected jurors were white, while one was mixed race but considered herself Hispanic.
Okay. So, what, like you kind of said a couple weeks ago, not jury of
Trayvon's peers.
Jury of Zimmerman's peers.
Correct.
Actually, it's pretty close to exactly, except for them being all women.
Like, yeah.
Because he is white passing but considers himself Hispanic.
That's kind of why I included that. I was like, interesting. Yeah. So you can relate to.
Yeah.
Got it. In a 30-minute opening statement on June 24th, prosecutor John Guy began by quoting a remark made by George Zimmerman in the call he made to the Sanford police dispatcher. Quote, "Funking punks. These assholes always get away." Which is not what I read earlier because that's not where I heard, but these are just quotes. And he says funking. I'm assuming he means fucking. I don't know. It's a quote. I put it in.
Maybe he's one of those young guys that just really acts old and doesn't want to say the F word.
Maybe.
So he says funking.
Or he's a guy that doesn't want to swear in front of a bunch of women.
Or that.
I have no idea, but yeah, he says funking punks, which is very hard to say.
That's very hard to say. It's like a tongue twister.
It is. Guy told the jury that the evidence would show Zimmerman suffered no serious injury in the fight, that and he was a liar and a wannabe cop.
Yeah, all of that sounds accurate to me.
100%. Don West began his opening argument for the defense in a different way. He told a knock-knock joke that left most of the courtroom observers scratching their head.
What now?
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
George Zimmerman.
Oh, George Zimmerman who?
All right, good. You're on the jury.
What?
No one laughed, and Wes promised no more bad jokes.
Well, that's not a joke. It doesn't even make sense. I don't get it.
I'm assuming they picked everyone that just hadn't heard of the case. I don't really know. I don't get it.
It's
like the only people that have never heard of him are the ones that are on this case.
A bunch of housewives who don't watch the news.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yikes.
Yeah. Turning to the evidence, Wes told the jury that he would show that Trayvon sucker punched his client.
How?
I don't know. And honestly, I never found anything, but...
Probably because they couldn't prove that.
Right. But
all they needed to prove was reasonable doubt.
Yeah. I was going to say the prosecution had the burden of convincing the jury beyond a reasonable doubt.
And if none of law enforcement thought that it was a case that should be brought before a jury...
Do you just want my script, ma'am?
No.
Okay. Well, stop reading it then.
Okay. You had said that earlier, that none of the law enforcement wanted...
I forgot.
Like, believed in the case.
Okay, I forgot. So the prosecution had the burden of convincing the jury beyond a reasonable doubt that George Zimmerman could not reasonably have believed that it was necessary to use deadly force to save himself from serious bodily harm at the hands of Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. Trayvon's friend, who had been on the phone with him leading up to the fatal shot, was a 19-year-old girl, and she would tell the story from something resembling to Trayvon's point of view, since she was basically, quote-unquote, the only other person there, I guess.
Yeah.
Also, this friend's name is in all the court documents. It's in news articles. I'm choosing not to name her. Yeah. I think she's been through enough.
Yeah, fair.
Trayvon's friend was still on the phone with him when him and Zimmerman came face-to-face. She reported that she heard Trayvon say, "Why are you following me?" and then heard a man breathing hard, because he was chasing him, say, "What are you doing here?" She then heard a bump, which she assumed was Trayvon's headset falling to the ground, and she yelled, "Trayvon, Trayvon." She heard wet grass sounds, and then she heard, quote, Trayvon saying, get off," before the phone shut off.
Oh. And this was 2012, probably a flip phone.
Yep. I'm assuming so. Actually, yeah. I saw a picture of it. Was it a flip phone?
Or like slidey phone?
I think it was a slider. Now that I saw it shoot and I didn't clock it to my memory. I'm sorry.
I was only thinking if it fell, it'd be easier to hang up if it was a flip or a slider.
I think it was a slider, but of course I didn't commit it to memory.
No, that's fine.
Unfortunately for the prosecution, this witness seemed ill-prepared for her testimony and spoke in dictation that jurors found hard to understand. Judge Nelson had to repeatedly admonish her to speak up or slow down. She endured 5 hours of sometimes withering cross-examination.
Oh my God.
From defense attorney Don West. I can't even imagine being on the...
5 hours?
I know.
Oh my God.
The tough questions were making her hostile and even caused her to say that she was leaving at the end of the day and would not be returning to the witness stand. She did return, but when all was said and done, the state's star witness had been, quote, neutralized.
Which if the jury was a little bit more diverse, I don't think that she would have been neutralized in the same way.
I don't either.
Jeez. Okay.
Attorneys offer closing statements on Friday, July 12th. Prosecutor Bernie De La Renata told jurors that Zimmerman was a lying wannabe cop who jumped to the unreasonable conclusion that Trayvon was a criminal.
Yeah.
Because of Zimmerman, quote, a teenager is dead through no fault of his own.
Yeah.
Defense attorney Mark O'Mara argued that Zimmerman was not guilty of anything but protecting his own life. This case is not about standing your ground. Prosecutor John Guy argued it's about staying in your car.
Yeah. Fair. Truly.
I agree. I agree.
And, like, this is just so shitty because, especially with only six to have to come to a conclusion versus 12, like, if they presented enough reasonable doubt and the prosecution was only in it half-heartedly.
Do you want my script? I'll just give it to you.
I'm just thinking out loud.
After Judge Nelson offered instructions on what the jury must find in order to return a verdict, either of second-degree murder or the lesser-included charge of manslaughter, the jury commenced its deliberations. According to later statements by two members of the jury was initially split. At least three jurors were firmly convinced that Zimmerman was not guilty of either murder or manslaughter, while the other three preferred to find him guilty of at least one of the two charges.
Mm-hmm.
But after 16 hours of debating the evidence, the jury returned its verdict of not guilty.
Great.
I fucking hate this. Mm-hmm. Several commentators described the efforts of the prosecution as half-hearted or even downright incompetent.
Oh, boy. I really didn't know that you were going to say that. That is, for a commentator to say that, yikes.
Yeah, yikes.
Yikes.
Ugh. So Lisa Bloom wrote a book called Suspicion Nation, The Inside Story of the Trayvon Martin Injustice and Why We Continue to Repeat It. And in it, she argued that Zimmerman's case was winnable and that the prosecution failed miserably.
Oh, that case is totally winnable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bloom had other criticisms of the prosecution as well.
Yep, I'm sure.
She contends that Zimmerman became suspicious of Trayvon because he was black, and the prosecution erred by attempting to stay a million miles away from the race issue.
Mm-mm. This is about the race issue.
Of course it is. And if you're not even going to bring it up as a prosecution, no wonder he got what he got.
Well, and particularly when your star witness is also a young black person and your jury is all white-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, it's
you have to paint a picture.
Yeah, of course.
And they didn't do that.
No. Especially staying, quote, a million miles away from the race issue. That's, oh,
the first thing you do is try to get those previous jail calls in to show a pattern of behavior on the part of George Zimmerman.
Of course.
And the judge might not allow it, but that would at least be trying.
Right, exactly. And I didn't find anywhere that
I'm
was
sure
even
they didn't.
So the ultimate question for the jury to decide was whether Zimmerman reasonably feared death or serious injury at the hands of Trayvon.
He did not.
There certainly is a strong argument to be made that Zimmerman's suspicion arose primarily because Trayvon was not a resident of the Twin Lakes development.
Oh, so he has every resident memorized?
He says he did. Literally, it says Zimmerman claimed he knew all the residents. So then you would know.
Basically, from what you've told me, I don't trust his memory at all. Because he said he went on a bunch of ride-alongs that he didn't.
Right. Well, right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, even if you didn't know Trayvon, you knew.
You would have known
either his dad or his dad's fiance.
Yeah. So there's no way it's the first time Trayvon's been there.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't for like a 10-day stretch like he was this time, probably a weekend, a week at a time. There's no way he's never been there before.
I know. But anyways. Mm-hmm. Trayvon was a teenager wearing a hoodie when teenagers had been implicated in recent crimes at Twin Lakes. And he was taking a stroll on what seemed like an unlikely time because it was dark and it was rainy.
He wanted Skittles, man.
I was going to say, I've certainly walked to the gas station for less than that in the dark.
Yeah.
Like, it is what it is.
There have been times where I'm like, I need a cookie immediately. I'm
absolutely
gonna go get something to eat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to go into the after.
Okay.
The Trayvon Martin Foundation was established in March of 2012 with the goal of increasing awareness about the effect of violence on families while scrutinizing racial or gender crime profiling.
Okay.
In 2013, Patrice Cullors, Alicia Garza, and Opal Tometi formed the Black Lives Matter Network with a mission to eradicate white supremacy and build local power to intervene in violence inflicted on Black communities by the state and vigilantes.
Alicia and Patrice wrote a book that I have and haven't read yet. It's called When They Call You a Terrorist.
Oh.
And it's a memoir about them starting the Black Lives Matter movement and all of the backlash they got from the country.
Oh, I would love to read that when you're done.
Yeah.
Wow.
I have a copy that I can lend you.
Thank you. Wow. That's also horrifying.
Yeah.
Backlash. Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Later in 2013, Zimmerman was charged with domestic aggravated assault, among other charges, after allegedly choking and aiming a gun at his girlfriend.
What happened to his wife?
I'm assuming after she was...
charged with perjury?
Yeah, she probably left him, but I don't know. And honestly, I don't really care.
Who would date him? After all this?
Probably one of the stupid jury members. Not honestly, really, but you know what I mean.
Honestly.
So the woman opted not to pursue the charges.
What?
Yeah. Honestly, he sounds like he's an abuser.
Yeah.
And it's very common for abusers to win you back after something bad has happened.
Yes. And they're so manipulative.
Yes.
Yeah.
Zimmerman was arrested again in early 2015 on another charge of aggravated assault.
Again, you don't say.
Yeah, color you
shocked. This is a pattern? A pattern?
I know. On February 24th, 2015, the Justice Department, after interviewing 75 witnesses, closed its investigation into the Trayvon Martin killing without filing any federal charges.
So, interesting. In light of what we talked about last week, I wonder what they were investigating. It would almost have to be a civil rights case, but it would have probably had to have been a hate crime.
Probably.
Because they would never have been able to get a color of law determination because he didn't actually have any authority.
Right. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. So like normally when you do like police shootings, the first one that's super easy to prove is they have authority under the government.
Right.
This guy just pretended he did, which means it can't be color of law.
I'm assuming your HOA Crime Stopper whatever guy has no authority.
No.
Yeah.
And
I know that's not any of the things he was, but you understand what I mean.
I know what you mean. Like a hate crime would probably be very difficult to prove here.
Probably, even
because
though.
Because of the stand your ground defense, because he was acquitted.
Yeah.
Because there weren't a lot of witnesses.
Like
direct witnesses.
Yeah.
So like that really sucks that they had closed the case, but It's probably as soon as they realize, oh, this man doesn't actually have any authority. Shit.
Yeah. Whew. Oh, you're going to hate this. You ready?
Oh, great.
In 2016, George Zimmerman announced his intention to auction off the Caltech 9mm pistol that he used to kill Trayvon Martin.
Shut up. He sold the gun as like, this is the gun I killed a 17-year-old boy with.
It says he intended to, but I don't actually know if it was auctioned off or not, but it doesn't matter. He wanted to.
Oh my God. He sees himself as a hero, clearly.
He wrote, "I am honored and humbled to announce the sale of an American firearm icon."
Vomit.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. This is a piece of American history.
No, it fucking isn't. It's a piece of American injustice.
I agree. He truly thinks that killing a 17-year-old is fine.
Wow.
Yeah. Zimmerman said a portion of the proceeds will go to helping fight Black Lives Matter and their, quote, violence against law enforcement officers, unquote.
Sir, if you have ever seen photos or video of a Black Lives Matter protest, you mm-hmm. will see that the police are in riot gear,
yeah.
and they are the ones committing violence.
Agreed. Agreed, 100%. The Trayvon Martin Foundation was asked to comment on Zimmerman's decision to sell the gun. They said, the Trayvon Martin Foundation is committed to its mission to ending senseless gun violence in the United States. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, the group said the foundation has no comment on the actions of that person. Which, who, you are bigger people than me.
Also, I love that they didn't name him.
Yes, that me too.
Because what he wants is celebrity.
Oh yeah,
and for
oh
them yeah, to not even feel like they're like he's not even worth naming.
Correct. I like, love it.
That's so powerful.
I know.
And yes, they are much bigger people than I
am. I know. I know. So in July 2018, the first part of a 6-part documentary series called "Rest in Power: The Trayvon Martin Story" aired on TV. Produced by Jay-Z and created with the full support of Trayvon Martin's family, the series explores the youngster's background, recounts the events leading up to his death, and examines the activist organizations that sprung forth in the aftermath, including Black Lives Matter.
I don't think I knew that this happened.
I don't think I did either, and I meant to watch it.
Yeah, we should try to find it.
We definitely should.
Yeah.
It's really important for people to see Trayvon as a person, his dad told People. Mm-hmm. He was a teenager who had a future ahead of him. Mm-hmm. This documentary will help people really know who he was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he probably had a very bright future ahead of him.
I have a quote from his mother in a little bit, mm-hmm. but like wanting to be in aviation, like he had goals and he was yeah. robbed.
Yeah.
Because he went to a gas station.
Yeah, because he happened to be wearing a hooded sweatshirt, which as we're recording, both of us are wearing.
Also, if it truly was raining out, of course he was.
Of course, and of course he had his hood up.
Of course.
Of course. And yeah, wanted a snack and some iced tea.
And it's like, it's 7:15. It's not fucking 1 a.m.
Yeah, exactly.
It's 7 o'clock at night. It's a reasonable hour. Yeah, it's February. It gets dark a little bit early. So what? I want ice cream at like 9 o'clock every fucking night. And if I don't yeah. have it in my fridge, guess where I'm going? My gas station.
Yeah, you're
going
to go get some.
And guess what? I live within walking distance to do so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It. Mm.
The mothers of the movement started as a result of the 2013 acquittal of George Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. Some of the women who formed the group are as follows. Gwen Carr, who is the mother of Eric Gardner. Mm-hmm. Sabrina Fulton, who is the mother of Trayvon Martin. Maria Hamilton, who is the mother of DeAndre Hamilton. Lucy McBath, who is the mother of Jordan Davis. Leslie McSpadden, the mother of Michael Brown. Cleopatra Pendleton Cowley, the mother of Hadiah Pendleton. Sorry. Geneva Reed Vale, the mother of Sandra Bland. Mothers of the Movement is an activist group created by a number of women whose African-American children have been killed by police officers or by gun violence. Mm-hmm. The women have attended many conventions to spread awareness of the police brutality crisis in the United States. The members of the movement use their grief to rally more people around their cause and increase involvement in their movement.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of what we've been talking about all month, where like, in order for something to change, something bad has to happen.
I know.
And like, it sucks that that's the way it went, but I can only imagine like mothers just being this force
mm-hmm.
against this police brutality and violence and stuff. Like mm-hmm. that must be so powerful to hear them speak. That must be so powerful.
I agree.
I bet the whole room cries.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of crying, I'm going to try to get through this very last part without.
Okay.
So lastly, I want to end on a statement from the Trayvon Martin Foundation that was released this year on his birthday. I want my son to rest in power. I want his name and his spirit to rise, to change the world. And that was a quote by Sabrina Fulton. Today on what would have been Trayvon Martin's 29th birthday, our museum shines light on his life and legacy. His mother, Sabrina Fulton, remembers him as an adventurous kid who loved planes and aspired towards a career in aviation. The airport also reminds me of Trayvon. I always think about if he was going to fix the plane or to fly the plane because he wasn't really sure. Fulton reflected on the 10th anniversary of his death in 2012. She remembers Trayvon as a teenager who played football, enjoyed music, and loved his family deeply. Trayvon Martin's story reignited a nation's fight for social justice, a fight that continues today and well into our future. And again, that statement was courtesy of the Trayvon Martin Foundation. And that is all I have.
That was this year that they released that?
February 5th of 2014, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was
24?
God dang it, yeah. It was released February 5th, 2024. Okay. I saw it on, I hope I credit it. If not, I'll go back and credit it at the end. I saw it on an Instagram post that was posted on one of the many, many things I follow, but it's the picture they shared is one we're going to share of him and his like aviation little. It's so cute. He has the biggest smile.
Oh, man. Yeah. Whew. Just robbed.
I know. 17 years old. Like, I don't really remember 17, but I know for a fact that I didn't know what I wanted to do.
I remember 17. I remember knowing what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I am no longer doing that, by the way. But yeah, I can imagine what he felt like. Like, just knowing, like, he had almost like a calling.
Yeah.
Towards something. And geez, to have that just robbed from him and his family.
Do you... Oh, I'm going to go into sources quick and then we'll do final thoughts.
Okay.
So sources this week, Trayvon Martin and the George Zimmerman trial, Trayvon Martin 10 years later by CBS News. This day in history, 2012, Florida teenager Trayvon Martin is shot and killed by Florida.com and, or Florida.com, by History.com. and it just says by the history.com editors, so I don't know if they ever really name someone, but I think I have a couple where they're not them a specific.
Quite a bit. I use them quite a bit, and I generally don't see names.
Okay.
It's usually like the editors.
Yeah. Okay. So NPR News, Code Switch, Race in Your Face, a look back at Trayvon Martin's death and the movement it inspired by Karen Grisby Bates. Biography, Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin was an unarmed American 17-year-old killed by George Zimmerman on February 26, 2012, sparking a national controversy by Biography.com editors. AP News, Trayvon Martin, 10 years later, Teen's Death Changes Nation by Dipti Hajila. FamousTrials.com, The George Zimmerman Trial, an account by Douglas Olinder. Freedom is a Constant Struggle, Ferguson, Palestine, and the Foundation of Movement by Angela Y. Davis, and Wikipedia, The Killing of Trayvon Martin. So, that was long and horrible and sad. Sissy, do you have any final thoughts you would like to share?
Oh, man. This sucked. You told it very well, so it's not a reflection on you at all. This is just like, this case sucks. And it sucks how recent the history is.
Yeah.
Like, for something this horrible to have... I mean, we know that there's been more since then, too.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, this story just sucks. George Zimmerman really, really sucks. And...
It's crazy to go back the last 2 weeks from the stories you've told.
Yeah.
When I was saying, like, this was so recent. This was in the, what, 60s?
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe this happened. This was so recent. And then shit like this.
Yeah. 60 years later. It's, no, 50 years later. It's still happening.
Yeah.
I mean, 60 years later, it's still happening, too.
Right. Well, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, too, knowing what is coming in the coming weeks on the pod. How this story really is able to, like, link our Black History Month series with what's coming next month for our Women's History Month series.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's really like a bridge into kind of the things that we're covering next, where it's basically the murders of young people.
Right.
That had an entire life ahead of them and didn't get to live it.
Right.
So, like, man, you told this really well.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I interrupted so many times.
No, that's okay. I just thought it was kind of funny.
I always enjoy listening to you tell stories because a lot of times I kind of know the baseline.
Yeah.
And you just tell me so much stuff I didn't know.
Yeah.
It's just mostly infuriating, but like infuriating because of the injustice, not infuriating because of, you know, anything you're doing or anything about the stories per se. But like, this was just a story of injustice.
I hate, and I understand why, I hate that he can't be put on trial again. And I hate that the prosecution was so half-hearted in doing so.
Yeah.
I hate how, I don't want to say like the stars aligned, but like I hate how the process went.
Yeah.
That,
well, and like that's where like, that's probably why they kept the federal case open as long as they did, trying to find an avenue.
Because
that would be the only way to put him on trial again, is to have a completely different jurisdiction, like a federal versus state trial. Yeah. But they probably just couldn't find enough.
Honestly, he should have been tried again when he tried to sell his gun.
Yeah.
Like, that is disgusting. I read that, I was floored. You think that killing a 17-year-old is completely okay because of the color of his skin?
Yeah. And
who the fuck are you?
To this day, I bet George Zimmerman thinks that he did the right thing and that he is a hero.
Oh, 100%.
And that is disgusting.
100%.
Yeah.
Anything else before we leave everyone on this horribly sad note?
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right.
Again, very well told.
Thank you. Sorry for the bummer of the month, everyone. It has kind of been a bummer month, especially the past few weeks, and it's only going to get worse. So stay with us. We are so happy you guys are listening, and please enjoy, and we will talk to you next week.
Yes. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you're looking to see pictures of the people we covered on today's episode, you can find us on Instagram at A Most Wanted Pod. We also post true crime trivia there every Sunday. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at A Most Wanted Pod. Find us and like us on Facebook at A Most Wanted Podcast. You can send us an email at amostwantedpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our website at amostwantedpodcast.com, and please remember to listen, subscribe, and love. Bye.